You're listening to Syndicated Thursday on Hacker Public Radio. Today we're going to take an episode from the QSK Netcast, originally aired on October the 15th, 2010. This is a talk that Russ gave at the Ohio Linux Fest 2010, and it's entitled The Origins of Open Source. And it's apt that we're talking about Linux Fest, as I would like to take a moment to ask you for some help. The Linux Fest Northwest is going ahead in Bellingham, Washington on the 30th of April to the 1st of May 2011. And we are going to be represented by a booth. You can get more information at the northeastlinuxfest.org. And we would like some help in finding people to come and join our team at the tables, in some finding some equipment, and if you have any more ideas for tables. If you would like to have more information about this, if you can go to the hackerpublicradio.org website, and hopefully we'll have some information available for you there. So if you would like, if you're in the Washington area, anywhere near this festival, it would be a cool festival to attend. And if you're interested in helping us out and meeting some of the hosts here at HPR, please feel free to come up and say hello. There's going to be stickers and possibly some business cards available for you on the day. We're actually running competition for business cards that are going to be hopefully printed and distributed over there on that day. So if you are good with art in any way and want to put some together, the front, we can have 100 different versions for the front of the business cards. So if you want to make your mark on HPR, now is a great time to do it. And now, back to the show.
Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
In the light of the day, you might be a different story. Some of the things Rich is going to bring up are topics like politics and religion, and those may be scary for some people. Hopefully everybody has a fairly open mind. So let's talk about North Halloween scan, being around about 4 billion years of history, of facts of history of man. No one wants to hear that. It's also not a lecture. There's going to be a few things back for light, but I'm not trying to force anything down your throats. The information from this talk may be quasi-accurate, but if it's truth, that's probably the coincidental. And hopefully it's not terribly boring. And since I haven't timed this talk before, I've only done it once, you may be out here in 20 minutes. So everybody check out. In 1,000 words, I didn't want to write. Here's a picture of what this talk is represented as. Hopefully, no one gets killed. That's all I would say. And if you have questions, some people like to move to get, wait till the end, but please feel free to interrupt me in the middle. That'll make the talk more interesting and make it a little longer. Okay, about me, talk a little about me already. This is me and my son, my species are home. But I got my first computer in 1978. I've been assistant administrator for almost 20 years now. So I know a little bit about some stuff. Everybody in here, collectively or individually, actually probably knows more about open source than I do. But we'll see how it goes. So we're going to start a little while ago. Talking about right about the time when chimpanzee diverted from human in evolution. Now, RAF run into religion, so sometimes talk about ninja religion. You'll see why when we get there. The date 4,100,000, 1983. BS. This talk is based on the chronology of a certain person whose last name rhymes with Solomon. And the S in this case is for Solomon. So about 4.1 million years before Solomon, we had first people. And it's likely that in the society of them, since we were all just trying to survive, pretty much, open source was the theme of the day. I mean, in order to survive, you basically had to learn from your friends, you had to learn from your neighbors, or if there weren't going to be any of us here 4.1 million years later, to get a beautiful stop. Somewhat later than that, somewhere, the Bible would probably put about 6,000 years ago, people decided that we needed class structure and power and wealth and things along those lines. And up until then, everything was property, share alike, or in creative commons. After that, things got a little private. And that's sort of where all the problems started. So, when you have a power structure, you have a power struggle, you have wealth involved, it's in your best interest to keep things that make you rich and powerful to yourself. And so the idea of sharing what you learn kind of went away. So in order to become open source in today's world, you have to shed thousands and thousands and thousands of years of problematic thinking. So let's move ahead, a little less than 4 billion years. And in the year, somewhere around the year 6983 before Solomon, we had these Egyptian folks. And since this is not a history lesson, there's been some debate recently about the fact that the Egyptian ethos sort of developed pyramid building, the concept of pyramid building around the same time, and simultaneously individually each other. But this is not really about that. This is about the idea of building a pyramid to begin with. Somebody had the right idea. It's like, well, when we die, we want to about spiritual ascension. How do we do that? Well, we accomplish that by building this great big building and making a temple for ourselves. Well, it's a cool idea. Well, apparently one guy had this idea. So he inspired a whole bunch of people, told them, you know, this is what I want. They figured out how to do it. The result is this. A sort of variant. We call this the step curve. This is what your early versions look like. Because this is how they figured out how to do it. It's like you start with a square layer, you make a smaller square layer on top. And you figure out how to build stuff up this way, but it doesn't fall over when you get done. That's a good thing. You know, the problem is this was a proprietary idea. You know, this was a temple built for oneself, and you didn't tell anybody else how to do it. So, the next person who looked at this temple and said, well, I'd like to be one of those too. I'd like to make mine a little bit better, a little more interesting looking. But I'd like to figure out how to do this for myself. So the next generation is going to get this. This is called a mistake. If anyone's familiar with the pyramid, I can't remember the name of the pyramid. I actually had this stuff built. Anyone remember who had this stuff built? Oh, we should follow this pyramid. That's what I'm saying. Well, I started building this one. They said, well, I'm going to build it at a certain pitch because I want it to be tall and inviting and inspiring for those people to see it. Well, they got up on the waves and discovered that if they could build it in this pitch, they could possibly build it. It was going to sink to the ground. Because Egypt is not made of, you know, bedrock. Egypt is made of sand, pretty much. And some, you know, dirt and stuff like that. So they got to a certain point and said, well, if we want this thing to actually look like that, then we're going to have to change the angle a little bit. So they made the pitch lower. We're able to build the pyramid, and as you can see, it didn't sink into the ground. Same thing. However, this is a problem with proprietary technology. We didn't have the information from the previous builder, had nothing to expand on, had to make his own mistake. And so you get what is a very long last name, and what's a mistake. And then somebody came along and said, well, I kind of get the idea. I'm going to reverse engineer this a little bit. I'm going to make a better pyramid. I'm going to figure out how to do the rock. So somewhere along the line, maybe many years later, probably hundreds of thousands of years later, I don't remember how long the time since last, you get what looks like an actual pyramid. And then you get the snakes and a bunch of other stuff that's still around today. And so, after much trial and error, reconfiguring things over thousands and thousands of years, because no one bothered to hand down this information, because everything was close to the best, you finally get something that looks like a reasonable facsimile of success. You know, this pyramid's been around for a long time, and it would still look better if all the people were around thousands of years later, didn't steal anything from the top down. But this kind of reminded me of a certain company who spends a lot of time developing software in a proprietary way. And after many, many years of iterations, it's finally achieved something that kind of looks like success. It's a place based on revenue. So. And here's a religion theme a little bit. Not that Egypt wasn't all about religion, too. This is where things get a little semi-preachy, so sorry. In the open source religion we're talking about before Stallman at this point, advocating things, being advocates for something is a good thing. You want something to be self-promotion, you want people to talk about it, you want to advance the art. But to be insistent about it, to the exclusion of all else, is problematic. I mean, you don't want to force your views on someone else. You know, that's a description of slavery, essentially. I see this a lot in the open source world. You know, there are the fedora heads, there are the vending nights, there are, you know, pay your distribution, whatever. nothing else is as good, nothing else can ever be as good, so on and so forth. So if you have ever been called or used to term like evangelist or evangelism, or proselyte, or proselytism, or zealotry, and I'm sure everybody here has seen it at least once, when talking about open source, sometimes you might be called a Gen Z Nazi or something like that. You know, any Gen Z Nazis here? No one's going to admit to that. But, you know, I think it's great to want to be about open source. But I've heard people walking up down the halls complaining about the fact that somebody walked in the room with an iPad, you know, or something along those lines. And I don't think that's necessarily what we need to be doing. We want to be proud of what we have. We want to be advocates. We don't want to be the Pope of open source. So, there's a sort of pattern of open source does. Everybody gets a flight like they did 4 billion years ago, 4 million years ago, excuse me, 4 billion years ago, it was barely Earth. 4 million years ago, people shared ideas. That's how society prospered. Is that technical true today? Yeah, of course it is. You share ideas, you promote your thought process without being solid. Ideas that will foster. Of course, in the open source world, there are more different standards anyway. If you put everything out there for people to learn from or add to, that's the best way to gain things about you. But unfortunately, our society is capitalism. We like capitalism. We want more stuff. We want to buy things. If you've ever looked at a laptop on a website and called it sexy, you know, that's what this is all about. All about capitalism. And there's a great dance experiment if they were not doing it. So the problem with open source is that open source is almost by definition communism. You know, you want everybody to share the wealth. You want everybody to be on the same playing field, to have the same things, to not have to keep up with Joneses. So when you advocate communism, you're going against the well-established concepts of capitalism. So I think for now, those things have to coexist. You have to have your Microsoft, your capitalists, to live with us, the communists, the socialists. So we can move forward a little bit further. This is about that long ago. There was a resurgence, and because I am meeting with radio operators, you know, selected that way right now, there's a resurgence of open source idealism. And this happened before software. We have this guy. Since this room is so large, I'm not sure we usually do, but anyway, this guy's name is Samuel Morse, and probably heard of him. If not heard of him, you've heard of Morse code, for sure. He's sort of the inventor of wired life. This happened, you know, a couple hundred years ago. We have communication. Now, the interesting thing that's going to come out of this is after Morse invents wired telegraphy and Morse code, some other people pick up on his ideas. People like this guy. Anybody knows those guys?
Yes, the Tesla hater.
What's that?
The Tesla hater.
He is the Tesla hater, right? He's a person who had a the war with Tesla. Menlo Park, very, very gifted inventor. And something, the creator of wireless. Depends on your mode of thinking. Some people think he was, some people think he wasn't. Speaking of Tesla, some people think this guy invented the modern age, 20th century. And he certainly did most experimentation with wireless, electricity, and, electronic design, electronic engineering, so on and so forth. In many things, that last bullet point, that he thing is clearly insane. But I think most of the insane people have most of the knowledge is from simple. You get what you get. Let me have this guy. You know, Mark Cohen. Supposedly the inventor of radio. But if you ask anybody, they'll debate whether it was this guy or whether it was Tesla. 6-1 had to the other night. No problem. So I'm sorry about that. Anyway, Mark Cohen, a mythical radio, sort of. Anyway, all of that is kind of interesting because the four guys that I just mentioned were all kings, if you will, of the capitalist world. They were interested in money. They were interested in power. They were interested in patents. And this room should hate me. I would hope. That's a pain of lawyers. But what's interesting about these guys is even though that's who they are, they eventually their technology became the foundation for technology that is now open. And the people who made it open were the experimenters, the amateur radio operators, the engineers who took what they learned in their quest for money and greed, longevity, and gave it to all of us who invented things for public distribution. And this happened, before 1903. So the idea of radio as a public medium is derived from closed-source ideas. And this is another one of those reasons why I think the two things have to mesh together. You can't have open-source without closed-source. You can't have good without evil. However you want to look at it. So these are some of the things that we have now because of closed-source ideology. Wireless telegraphy, things like transistors. Why is a transistor important? Well, because every computer on the planet right now has millions of them in it. If we didn't have transistors, we wouldn't be here right now talking about this. We need things like digital mode communication, digital TV and radio, high capacity storage, solid state devices, high speed microprocessors, like I said, derived from transistors. And new medical devices, things that are going to save our lives in the future, nanobots and nanotech, all derived from closed source ideology. And we often think of the healthcare industry as being closed now. But there's a track here at this conference that's talking about how open source is now influencing healthcare. So, some give, some take. You have to do what you have to do to get to the end result. These are schematics and blueprints. Well, what do they represent? They represent open source. If you have access to one of these pieces of paper, it tells you how to build this microcontroller that's on the left, or whatever the public thing is on the right. And you've been given something that's open source that's derived from the standard that somebody figured out. But these are electronic devices, which means they were probably invented in some part, or in most of the part, by somebody like Tesla, who all he wanted to do was patent everything on himself, to be the king of electricity, to provide wireless electricity to the world, and to become rich while doing so. Zero Day, 1983. This is when 1983 kind of a pivotal year when the idea of open source and the embodiment of open source kind of come together. There's an interesting mix on the slide of open and closed thinking. the IETF is kind of a progenitor of open source. Open source as a field of study, as in a way of thinking. They created the concept of open standards. And they also created the RFC, the idea of the RFC, the request for comment, which is an open source way of communicating ideas to develop future standards. Well, DARPA, which a lot of people probably consider voodoo, black magic, one of the government's evil empires, they use all those standards, those open standards developed by the IETF to do their work. Now, what comes of that work, anybody can say, nobody can say, I guess, unless you're part of DARPA. And I guess no one can admit to that in this room. But they use open standards because they see them as a good thing. They also use requests for comments to do their work. And this is one of the most close to the best hidden secret military agencies that exist today. Not counting the NSA. So they used to not quite be as evil as they were. I mean, back when they were DARPA, before the DARPA, they were kind of better than this thing. So Richard Stallman obviously was born in 1983, but this is when he took the ideas generated in his head, based on those of other people, and joined them together to do things like that the IETF promulgated and started the Free Software Foundation and also announced the idea of the things that he's famous for. Things like free software, copylefting, which copylefting was a real interesting legalese concept, where instead of using copywriting to retain your rights, you use copylefting to make sure that the rights are promoted, that everyone is given the rights. So being as the opposite of copywriting, they called it copylefting. He also created this document that many people call HOLE, GPL. The GNU Public License is what makes Linux Linux, but even the second version of Linux, first version, got rewritten pretty quickly. And most of the work that was done in propagating these ideas was done over the precursor to the internet. And the precursor to the internet was the ARPANET. And is it a coincidence that something that has become closed source and cloak and dagger was started as an open source idea? No, not at all. Because one idea evolves from the other, and both have to coexist. Stallman was also integral in creating the standard that we now call POSIX. I believe he actually created it out of whole cloth. So he's the inventor of POSIX, the standard that we still use today for new software. Now, the reason that Emacs comes into this is because I had to come back to religion at some point, because Stallman's kind of like a religious icon. And these are quotes that are attributed to Richard Stallman. And it is. Because if anyone's going to be calling out the source zealot, RMS is the guy. And these are some of the reasons why. Why is he so into Emacs? Well, because he created it. So everybody in this room who likes Emacs is a friend of Richard Stallman's. He calls himself St. Ignatius of the Church of Emacs. Pretty specific religious reference. He also calls by three times, which also happens to be Roman numeral 6, the editor of the beast. And These religious concepts, just you can't get away from them. They keep showing up. The idea that open source, to some, is a religion. This is beginning of text with GPL. There are lots of open source licenses these days. GPL is just one of them. The reason why the GPL is so prominent is because it's Linux. Everything that is Linux is released under the GPL. After your BSD user, and I see some of the horns out here, BSD is released under the BSD license. Well, there's kind of a, not a problem necessarily, but there's an interesting side effect of BSD license. The GPL, because it's copyleft, promotes the idea that anything that's released under the GPL continues to be GPL, which means everything going forward will be free and open for everyone else to build and expand from. BSD almost takes the opposite approach. BSD is so open that it's closed, because you can take BSD code, write closed source open software, and release it without fear of retribution. So there can be, yeah, some downside to openness. BSD license, well, for some things it's probably great. You know, you write this particular line piece of throw it code and just release it with BSD license because you really don't care what happens to it. But if you want something to stay open, you have to use a different license, and GPL is a good one. So the Commute project, again, Richard Stallman, started in September 1983, where the GPL was developed by him. So does anyone know what the new word is?
Unfinished.
It is unfinished. You know why it's unfinished?
They try to make it a too complicated of a kernel instead of just using a...
More or less. It's actually because of Linux kernels that it's unfinished. The new herd is actually what Linux is supposed to be. The problem is, GNU and the GNU project got all their software done except for the kernel, except for the operating system. The operating system was supposed to be the HERC, the HERC part of the new HERC. Well, they were going for the microkernel architecture, everything in user space, or almost everything in user space. When they got to that point, they discovered, wow, programming is really hard. So they got to about 1991, trying to develop a new HERC, and then Torvalds walks in and says, I've got a kernel. It's already done. It's called Linux. Stallman says, well, we'll take it. So they get together, and now you have to do Linux. Which is why Stallman is so adamant about calling Linux a new Linux. Because all the software is his. Kernel is Linux's. Now, the GNU project is still working on the kernel. They'd really like to finish it. And it's my understanding that it's about 60% complete, and that there's a project called Debian, which you can actually download and install on a test box. It's definitely not something you want to use in production, but you can run a GNU operating system that has nothing of Linux in it, if you want to try this. If you don't, stick with Linux like the rest of us. Or BSD, you know, whatever the thing is. But the new herd, while it's not finished, as has been pointed out, does still exist, and it's still being developed. And you can run it on i386 and 64 architectures. So, Stallman comes up with the idea of free software, which is what you think is free as in reason. Liberation, not as in money. Although it's often free as in beer as well. Open source was a term that was used as a marketing gimmick to codify what free software is and to make it more accessible to other entities, to give it a face in an era of litigiousness, of patents, you know. of capitalism, in other words. Open source is the face of free software in our capitalist society. It's where we can encapsulate the socialism of being free inside the greed of everything else. So what else is open source? I mean, open source, you know, for a large part, we're talking about software. But there's also other open source things that are open standards. There are other things that are open. One of the things that's coming into the fore right now is open hardware. There is the Open Motor Project, which is trying to create open cell phone firmware, so that you can do with it whatever you want. I don't know where they are in their development cycle right now, but it's a cool project anyway. Everybody here has heard of the Arduino, I assume. If you haven't, you might want to check into it. It's an open source microcontroller. People are doing interesting and crazy wacky things with the Arduino. It's very cheap. It's easy to use, easy to program for. Software for open source that runs it is abundant, and it's again a cool project. Sun, before Sun was no longer Sun, created the Open Spark processor. This project is probably dead, thanks to Larry. If it wasn't already before. But again, it's an attempt at an open standard other than software. There's open content. Things like Creative Commons. Creative Commons, this is one of those things that pisses off the RIAA and so on. And that is considered to be the best. I consider that personally. Wikipedia is open source content. And as everybody knows, you have to take open source content with a grain of salt, I guess. No one goes to Wikipedia thinking they're getting facts. They're getting rough approximations. And now, again, as I talked about healthcare, open standards are now encouraging in healthcare. These organizations are open health organizations where they deal with open source software and things like RFCs to deal with initiatives that don't get dealt with by closed or capitalist drug societies. You know, this is not AstraZeneca, these are open organizations. Organizations to deal with things like malaria, third world diseases, and things like, what's the one I can't think of? Anyway. Stuff that no one's developing cures for at this point. These initiatives are designed to deal with those. Because, as Chris Rock says, if there's no money in it, there's never going to be a cure. So now we move up to today, 27 years after the foundation of the Free Software Foundation and the surgeons. Insurgents, maybe, our RMS. So, there's two different kinds of freedom and software freedom. We're an open source, we both, I guess we all know this. We love stuff that's free. Free is computer. Free is computer is great. But the real freedom in open source is the freedom from patents and conferences, things that keep technology down, that keep that open source religion, that socialism of understanding. The second bullet in the Libre section, please take that to heart. This is where I am false. Software patents are evil and grand. Do whatever you can to fight them. And if you're not involved in amateur radio or open source, both of which are open standards right now, please get involved. I believe that free and open source software is an ultimately attainable goal, but we have to be patient, we have to not evangelize, we have to not be that guy I just was 10 seconds ago in order to get there. We have to coexist with our capitalist brethren. We have to not diss the people walking around with the iPhone while we wave around our androids, etc., etc. I also believe that because open source is a more powerful idea, and because it has more dedicated backers, that will come out on top eventually. But not today. Today, we just go on about our lives, we promote, we do what we can, and we'll get there. Everything that's needed always gets there. And I'm going to end this talk, hopefully not too early, with a little 1 minute 49 second music interlude, which means I don't have to talk for 1 minute 49 seconds. Is anybody here familiar with a group called the Anxious Note? Oh, wow. Yay! Okay. So for the rest of you, this will hopefully be interesting. Now, the reason this song is interesting to me is because it's a song about the hate of closed source. It's about, just like, specifically, Bill Gates. What's interesting about the song is it's not Creative Commons. I had to get permission from the author to play. So, once again, I'm coexisting in a capitalist society to bring you something interesting in an audio form. It's also an MP3, so. Take that, watch a lot. Anyway, this is the Gates. Yeah. Except they turned off all of them. Try it again. Don't plug my plug. Thanks very much to the Music Notebook, and thanks for tonight for listening. I will take any questions if anybody has them. Probably not something that sparked a lot of questions, I think, but a lot of old rap. Is anybody completely bored? That's good, no hands.
Yeah, you know, I think the mic is live, if you don't mind. My ears are horrible.
Sort of a question or comment. Would you include Linux in your historical guideline?
As I roll academic or non-commercial open source.
Linux?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're familiar with Linux.
I'm not sure I understood the question.
How would I include it in the timeline?
Yeah, in your history timeline, because it was sort of open source, but only for non-commercial and academic uses.
Right. Well, my understanding of Linux is that it's kind of what Linux was derived from, is another Linux Torvalds idea. And I don't know that the concept of GPL and open source licensing didn't really exist at the time of Linux. I think I was using it, you know, in 1990, 1991, just before the whole Edison thing kind of came out. I don't think you can call it open source or not. I think you can call it open source conceptually. I don't know if you can call it open source legally.
You can now, because I believe now it's at least under GPL, if I'm not mistaken. But it was sort of a precursor of Linux. It was what was developed before the i386 architecture. So it's in that time frame. It's of Linux's mindset. So I guess that's how I would include it. Well, that'd be it. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.